Welcome to Career Tools. This week, compress your work, double your time, part two. Questions this cast answers are, how do I get more done in less time? How do I get faster at the things I have to do? And does the law of diminishing returns apply? It will soon be February, the month of love. And if you love or would love to come to a Manager Tools public conference, we will be in Frankfurt on the 7th and 8th of February, in Chicago on the 21st and 22nd, and in Los Angeles on the 28th of February and the 1st of March. We're bringing our Effective Manager Conference and Effective Communicator, so you can take 2 days out of the office and change your work life. We would love to see you there. Just go to the website and look for training. Our six-step model for compressing work consists of analyze, plan, prepare, experiment, refine, repeat. Last week, we ended in the planning stage and we gave you one example and we left you with the teaser for the second example. So I'm going to say the example again, just so in case you don't remember or you didn't hear it. And then we'll give you the brainstorm list that we came up with of ways that you could compress this work. So the example we gave you last week was doing expenses, which is a series of tasks, and they're fairly easy to compress. But people, other people, are much harder to get them to compress their work, to make them speak more quickly or give you what you need more quickly. So in this example, we're going to talk about a negotiation or a call to a customer or both, and how we would halve the amount of time that that takes. So again, this is a brainstorm list. We're not going to do all of them. We're going to talk about that in a minute. This is just all the ideas you can come up with. And these ideas you can translate to examples in your work. And hopefully this long list shows you how many ideas you can probably come up with for your own tasks.
Yeah. So we gave you the teaser last week. The example is about this call that we're making to customers. And some of you call or have to maybe interact with high I's and high S's. And so you love that, or maybe you don't love that those always take twice as long as you think they should, at least. So just some examples, some ideas. First, you could prepare materials ahead of time so that you can work through the conversation more quickly. It's just easier if you have certain things there at your disposal, you're ready, you have them, so you don't need to take the extra 30 seconds, 40 seconds to find something. Let me pull this up. Let me do that, because that just gives some other people an opening to start a story. And then you've got to wait. I've got it pulled up. Oh, let me just finish this story. Mm-hmm. If I would have just had it ready.
Uh-huh. Missed my opportunity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can prepare a demonstration for the customer to watch before you talk. So video is ubiquitous now. We can all take video, really good quality video, on our phones. And maybe you can give the customer a link to a video in an email before the conversation. You can't guarantee they're going to watch it, but at least you've made the attempt to give them the information that gives them the background to make your conversation go more quickly.
Yeah, especially if you find that you're covering a lot of the same material over and over on the same calls. Easy to just make a video and say, here's that. It may not save you time every call, but someone will watch that video and that'll make that call shorter. You could also prepare a number of scenarios so that you don't have to calculate alternatives kind of on the fly, right? If you're going through and you know these are potential different options, you should have those calculated and know what the different, you know, if they were to ask, well, what if I get A, C, and E rather than A, B, and D, right? You should know, okay, well, A, C, and E would cost this, or these are the options, depending on scale.
You could have a checklist for the points of the agreement that you need to cover. So, you know, when you go somewhere and they have a form for you to fill in, you have to initial parts of it, and then you have to sign it. Sometimes the person has, ahead of time, marked the places where you're going to have to sign. Sometimes they haven't. And just marking that time or them pointing to it or you having to read it and work out where you have to sign and where you don't, you can save that time by having done that ahead of time. Or if you're on a call, you could have a list of, I have to get the customer to agree to the amount they're going to purchase, the the amount they're going to pay and what the shipping timeline is. Those are the three things I need out of this call. So you have a checklist of three things. These are the three things I need to cover. That stops you going off on a tangent or forgetting to get one of those things and then having to call back.
Absolutely. And maybe you have a colleague who is just seems to get through these calls a lot faster than you. And you can just say, hey, Bob, how do you manage to get your customers to be so agreeable? How do you get them to just, you know, go through the motions and get through those calls quicker? It's just so fast. I'm impressed, right? Talk through it.
Yeah. No, nothing like a bit of flattery to get you some information. You can set an agenda for a call or a meeting. Please set an agenda for a call or a meeting so that the customer knows this is what we're going to talk about in which order. Because often if you start one of these calls and then somebody will say, oh, but I wanted to ask about this. And you're thinking, yeah, I'm going to cover that, but we can't do that until we've done this. And I know I'm in control. I know what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you haven't conveyed that list of things you already know about, then it's not the customer's fault that they're asking you questions. So sending the agenda ahead of time so they know what you're going to cover and in what order makes those calls easier.
Yeah, it's a small thing, but I would even add there, you can start the call with just a quick rundown of this is what we're covering today. This is the purpose of this call. I want to make sure we cover this, and then we cover this. And that helps guide the conversation and helps whomever, whether it be a customer or someone else you're on the phone with, understand where they are in the call at all times. You could also ask the customer if they have any specific questions that they would like addressed on the call in an email beforehand, right? You send them an email and just say, hey, so really excited for our call, looking forward to it. If you have any questions that you specifically want to address or that I can make sure I address for you, feel free to let me know ahead of time and I'll make sure I have all the information you need.
Again, only maybe 25% of people are going to do that, but 25% of the time, it's going to save you time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have a shell agreement ready to be filled in as you talk. So a lot of times you can have a PDF form and you can start it before the call and you can fill in the stuff you know, like, oh, I know the customer's name and address, or I know where it's going to be shipped to. Fill that stuff in so that you're only checking it rather than asking for it on the call, and have it pulled up and ready to be saved or saved so you're oversaving it beforehand so that you don't have that whole, I'm pulling it up now. I'm going to share my screen. Oh, where's the PowerPoint gone? Do it beforehand.
Absolutely. Another thing you can do is, it wouldn't be a Career Tools Cast if we didn't mention DISC, and you could think about your customer's DISC profile based on what you know about them and other interactions that you've had, and communicate or think about how to communicate most effectively with them. So if they are high D and high C, or high D or high C, right? They're task focused. So you're going to be able to get through that agenda, right? Line by line. They're going to be much more on task and to the point. Your high I's, your high S's, right? It may look a little different for them. You may want to say, here's our agenda. You know, how are you doing today, right? Get them, you know, they want to talk about feelings. They want to talk about that stuff. And then you can say, okay, I'm going to feel like a complete heel if I didn't get through some of the stuff that we need to get through on this call. So let's get through this and that and go through it, right?
You might put stuff in a different order too. A high C might, the bottom line, a high D, definitely the bottom line, how much am I paying? Whereas a high S would be, how are the people that I'm buying this for going to be affected? So you might put things in a different order so that you can bang through the things that are checkable, but you put the S's mind at rest beforehand so that they can pay attention to what's checkable.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a brilliant point, Wendy. I tell people in sessions all the time, if you're talking to a high D or high C, you want to start with, this is how much money I can save you. If you're talking to a high I or a high S, you're going to be more effective saying, this is how I'm going to make the people in your organization's lives easier, right? Just different.
And if it's a high D and you say, this is how much it's going to cost you and this is how much you're going to save, you don't have to have the rest of the conversation because they'll just decide based on that.
Okay, yes, or okay, no.
Yeah. Next up, make sure you start on time, because if you're not starting on time, There's no way you're finishing on time. That's an easy one.
Yep, easy. You could also provide any briefing materials or supplemental materials ahead of time. You know, this is some things that we're going to go through. We're going to look up. Now, of course, some people that you interact with are going to pull it up for the first time on the call. And some people are going to have it up ready to go for the call. The people that have it up ready to go, you're going to save some time. But either way, I would even argue, and that's not what the purpose of this cast is, so I don't want to detract from it, but either way, that's good insight into the people that you're communicating with.
Absolutely. I noticed I was trying to change doctors, and they often have, here's the new patient information. And I'm the kind of person who prints that off, fills it in, leaves it by my front door, and takes it with me.
Mm-hmm.
When I walk up to you and I say, I'm here for my new patient thing, and here's the paperwork, you know what I want is efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can create a checklist for a customer of all the paperwork you need. If you know, like, if when you do a mortgage and you have to have 20 things, there's nothing for a customer like having a checklist. And you say, you need to give me these things, and they can check it off and know that they have them. And you know that the whole thing will go more effectively, more efficiently, because they'll have everything you need ahead of time.
Yep. Every February, we get a checklist from the gentleman that does our taxes.
Oh, that's genius.
Here's what you need to bring. If this has happened, bring this. If this has happened, bring this. And, you know, it's helpful. It's really, really helpful to just print that thing off. And then, you know, because here's the other thing. Some of that stuff, they may not be the sole person gathering that information. How easy is it to print something off, circle through a few things, notate, hey, this is the stuff that I need from you, and just delegate that and give that to someone and say,
yes,
can you gather this stuff for me? Oh, so much easier than saying, hey, here's this email. You read through, glean from this email what you can provide to me, and then I'll provide the other things. Oh, just a checklist.
Checklist. Yes, checklist.
All about checklists.
Indeed. We can explain the process to the customer so that they know when we're waiting on them. How many times do you have a conversation with someone and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know you were waiting on me. I have to make that decision before you can do anything else. Oh, if only I'd known.
Right. Oh, you could even prepare a template for the notes that you take for your notes so you can find information more easily, right? Just as simple as, I know I'm going to take certain notes during this call on certain things. And so if I have a template or a form that says, this is where I capture the information about the client, this is, or the customer, this is the area where I capture the information about why they've reached out or what I can help them with, right? Then the next section is, what options have I presented to them that I feel like best meet their needs? If you have to do that on several of these calls, so much easier to flip back through your notes and look at the precise place on the page where you make those notes rather than having to read the whole thing.
Yeah, and scroll. And of course, you can use Text Expander, which we talked about in the last cast, and I don't think I was effusive enough. One of my doctors has a Text Expander so that when she's filling in the notes that go to you about what did we discuss, she just puts in 3 or 4 letters and this whole thing comes up of, we talked about this and I told you to do this and you have to do it 3 times a day and do it for 4 mm-hmm. weeks, and it all comes up. And so if you have 4 options that you always offer a customer, you have a shortcut that's /1, 2, 3, or 4 and the whole thing fills itself in. Oh, you will feel like a genius.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing is, record the customer phone number so you don't have to look it up. Maybe you make a whole series of calls all day. Maybe you make, at the beginning of the day, a list of those numbers so you don't have to look them up all day. It's simple.
Yeah. So I find something as simple as, and I think we've talked about this, I think I've gotten anywhere but from here. So I think it was in a podcast one time, maybe Control-Shift-K when we talked about that. But so it was the network cast. But just putting the phone number in your calendar, when you are going to make that call and you have it on your calendar,
you just press the button.
Just putting the phone number right there. So simple.
If February is too soon for you to think about us being in Europe, we're going to also be in Europe at the end of June in London, the 27th to the 29th of June with our public conference offerings. But also, if you're a client organization, you have more than 15 managers to be trained, this is your opportunity to have us work directly with you. There is a significant cost savings with groups of 15 to 30 and no airfare charges if we're already there. I know this is 5 months away, but you might want to start talking to Maggie as the planning for us is already underway for going to Europe. And there's a bunch of scheduling demands and we want to make sure that if you want us to visit you, we can get those dates. Just email Maggie at manager-tools.com.
Okay, so our next step is prepare. So for the next 1 to 2 weeks, you're going to prepare using the methods that you've decided to use from your brainstorm, which means creating the cheat sheets, starting the folder, creating the text expanders, talking to your peers, Barbara, Joe, Bob, whoever you are going to leverage for help or resources, reading that FAQ section or the help text, ordering the calculator, adding time to your calendar to make sure that you have time to do all this stuff. Don't try and prepare to use all the new tools at once. Because while you're ordering a calculator will take you a minute or two, some of these tasks are going to take significantly longer. And so you want to choose the ones that you think are most likely to give you the biggest return on investment, make the biggest difference. So consider that as you're going through and deciding which of these you're putting in. There's other obvious reasons for not doing everything at once, including that it's infinitely harder to learn 10 new shortcuts in 1 week than to learn one new shortcut each week for 10 weeks, right?
I don't know why that. I mean, I do. My brain can't take it. And this stage is frustrating for those of us who just want to get on with it because you're not getting to implement all of your brilliant ideas. We had 20 brilliant ideas and we're not going to do all of them. And instead, you're doing more work, you're creating the cheat sheet and you're still not seeing any benefit. But this is an important step. Don't skip this step and don't try and do it with the other steps. This is an investment in your future efficiency. Until now, that task has taken twice as long. Another 2 weeks of it taking twice as long won't matter. And you have to create the cheat sheet. Otherwise, you don't benefit from the idea that you had and the benefit of having it.
Yeah. And it gives you a starting point for the next time. So on the other hand, though, the time limit of 2 weeks stops you from perfecting these ideas. We understand why you may want to make sure that everything is perfect before you start, but you're not benefiting from any of the work that you're doing if you never implement, right? It's that paralysis by analysis thing. At some point, you've got to take the step, you've got to implement, you've got to do it. So that's why the limit of 2 weeks. Do what you can in those 2 weeks and then implement. Do what you can to realize some of the benefits.
There's a podcast called The One-Third Planning Rule. Again, if you go to managertools.com and search, you'll find it. And we tell you to use 1/3 of the time available for any project for planning. And that's what contributes the most success in the execution phase. And it also stops you going too fast or too slow in the preparation phase by giving you that time. 1/3, we time box. Mm-hmm. We make sure that you do enough, but we also don't give you too much. So don't skip this step, but also don't let it last forever.
Yep, exactly. Our next step is experiment. Now, this is when you get to use the tools. You get to, you know, implement all the ideas and hopefully start to see or realize some benefits. See your work compressing a little bit. This experimental phase can't be just a week, though. This needs to take time over several weeks. So don't try the new tools once and say, this is going to work or this isn't going to work, right? You've got to see this as, Wendy, would it be fair to say this is something you want to see more data? You want to see how this applies more over the course of several weeks? Because you may luck out, right? You may have that week where you only went on one trip last week instead of going on two or three. Mm-hmm. And so your expenses are negligible, relatively speaking.
Yeah, it was an easy week.
Yeah, that's not the right time to make that decision. So you want to get some data. And on the flip side of that, it may be that you had a week where you took more trips than you've ever taken. You had more expenses, and you're going to have, that week, it's significantly more difficult. It may be more difficult because you're doing new things. So, for example, if you set up that text expander, you might have to look that, shortcut, that short code or the keystroke shortcut. You might not have that committed to memory yet. You might have to look it up a few times. And if you have to look it up a few times, it's going to take a little bit longer. But that's the process of forming that habit, right? And that's what we're talking about. If you can go through that week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks over the course of time, you'll see a better picture of how much time you'll be able to realize
yes.
out of that.
The first time you do anything is not a good indicator of how well this is going to go in the future. You've got to give it a few times. If I had decided to learn to drive based on my first driving lesson, I never would have learned to drive. It took a few before I thought, oh, I might actually get this one day.
Right.
So in the first month, we're going to use two measures to help you assess whether or not your plan is working. And first is the obvious one, which is the quantitative one. I can't say
quantitative one.
Quantitative. How long does it take? So we, in the first week, we took notes on all of the things we were doing. We looked at the tasks and how long they took. So now we can compare, is this new process, is this new checklist, is this whatever Barbara suggested to you, is it making the task shorter?
Yeah, exactly. The second measure is the qualitative one, because we know that the task may take longer initially. So we also have to ask ourselves, is the task easier overall? If the shortcut you use does actually make the task easier, it will most likely be faster once you've committed that shortcut to memory. That's what this is about.
Yeah, you can't judge it based on the time in the first week or the first few weeks.
No, you need more data.
Again, you need more data. Okay. So the next step is refine. And once you've started compressing the time taken to use the task that you, with all these tools that you developed, you will probably have ideas for improvement. There's nothing like trying to use something to discover, oh, I should have done it this way, or, oh, this could be even better if I did this. So in the first couple of weeks, these ideas that you have will probably still make a significant difference to the time taken to do this task. So let's say you have a cheat sheet, and the first week you use the cheat sheet, it does make the call easier, but you realize there's three things that you missed that you should be on the cheat sheet. So then you put that on the cheat sheet. And then the next week you think, oh, there's one more thing and it's really important. So now we've made that cheat sheet even better. But once you've achieved 50% compression on this task, stop working on this task and work on another one. So if the task takes an hour and you've shaved off 30 minutes, stop making improvements and work on the next task on your list.
This answers one of the podcasts or one of the questions in the podcast introduction. Does the law of diminishing returns apply? And it does. This is where we see that if you've got that task that you reduce by 50% and you get 30 minutes back in your week, if you were to get another 50% improvement, that's only going to give you back 15 more minutes, where a 50% improvement or reduction in a different task that takes an hour would give you 30 minutes. So it'd be better to shave off 50% of everything you do and then go around again and iterate and work on that process again. So stop working on that task and work on the next task, because it's better than taking one task and just optimizing it to the fullest extent.
At some stage, you're going to be optimizing it from 11 minutes to 10, and you're only saving a minute. Whereas another task, you could even a 15-minute task, you halve that, that's 7 minutes. It's a big difference. Mm-hmm. So now we repeat. Having achieved the 50% improvement in the number one task, it's time to go back to your time analysis and start on the next most impactful task. So this whole process takes about 8 weeks, as we've described it. And that time analysis that you did 8 weeks ago is probably still valid. Your job hasn't changed. The environment hasn't changed that much that the next task you choose isn't a good one. But the second time you do this, so you've optimized two tasks and now it's 16 weeks after you started. That's a whole quarter. And for some people in some roles, your entire job can change in a quarter. So if things have changed considerably, then do the time analysis again so that you are choosing the right task based on the criteria that we gave you in the first podcast. Do the time analysis so that you're sure that you have the right data to make that choice.
Yeah, and you get an additional benefit for repeating the time analysis. You get to see the new and improved process effect on the aggregate time that you're spending, right? It's worth reflecting on whether you chose the right tasks, whether they had the effect that you expected, whether if there were any downsides or maybe even benefits that you didn't expect. Too often we change our personal workflows and we think it's for the better without really considering whether or not we achieved what we expected. We just say, this feels like it's got to be faster, right? Maybe it's not. Maybe it is. The reflection will also help you make better choices for the next task that you want to attack.
And there is no end to this repeating action. Now we've got a repeat, so we just go back to the top and we start over. Our jobs change, our tasks change, technology changes, workflow changes, everything changes. There will always be a new activity that you can focus this improvement effort on. The 50% of the time you save will quickly, we hope, be filled with more important activity, and that will lead to promotions or a different project or a whole new set of problems to deal with. It's just not a one and done effort because there'll always be something your whole working life.
The good part about this process is you have a process now for doing this. And, you know, I can't remember where I heard it. Not mine at all. I might have been Mark, might have been David Allen. But somebody said, listen, the benefit of having a wagon is, yeah, you fall off the wagon. Everybody falls off the wagon. You may have something that comes up and completely just interrupts this process for you. But you know exactly where to pick it back up. Mm-hmm. The benefit is you have a wagon to get back up on. And that's what I think of this.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.